This podcast is brought to you by BetRivers. Download the BetRivers app from the App Store or Google Play Store. Must be 21. Available in Ohio only. Void where prohibited. Terms and conditions apply. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Sports gaming is provided in partnership with Dayton Real Estate Ventures, LLC, DBA, Hollywood Gaming at Dayton Raceway.
If you're a tennis fan, you'll love Betting Weekly Game Bet Match on the Bet Rivers Network. Whether you're a bettor or just love tennis, you'll enjoy the in-depth analysis each week of the tennis calendar. Subscribe to Game Bet Match today from your favorite podcast provider. It's the Mike Missanelli Podcast on the Bet Rivers Network.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the Mike Missanelli Podcast. Yes, we are doing this podcast in the morning. After everybody got a restless night of sleep after what happened last night at Madison Square Garden. So we are going to recap the disaster of what happened last night as the Sixers, with a five-point lead, lose it in the last 27 seconds. It's the Mike Missanelli Podcast brought to you by Bet Rivers. This is podcast number 179, Tuesday morning, April 23rd. A little later, obviously, we will talk about the Eagles draft. That's coming up later this week. The Phillies are on a roll with seven wins in a row. Big win last night as Ranger Suarez gets the job done again. And then we'll have some interesting tidbits to talk about on Mike Unleashed. I am devastated by last night. I'm just stunned and in disbelief as to what happened last night. Because, you know, this was a game that you didn't think the Sixers were going to win. During that game last night, the Knicks proved that they are a tougher team. And so I just thought a loss was coming the Sixers' way, and they were going to be down 0-2 in the series. And then all of a sudden you look up, and the Sixers somehow, with some miracle, get a lead. And they blow that lead in the end in one of the most unlikely finishes you're ever going to see. Now, I've got a lot to say about a lot of people on the Sixer team, including the head coach. But let's go over the frantic few moments, the last few moments. First of all, the Sixers have two players, basically, that are trying to win this series with. It's Joel Embiid and Tyrese Maxey. And they are getting zilch from everybody else. And I know there are people out there go, oh, Embiid, he can't carry the mail. And some fodder for that is that he didn't have a rebound in the fourth quarter. I get all of that. By the fourth quarter, he seems to be worn out. And that's a byproduct of what he's going through with the knee. And the cynical people say, yeah, Mike, but it happens every playoff series where he doesn't deliver in the end and he doesn't bring them home to a victory. All right, we'll discuss that in a second. But last night I'm looking at a team that didn't have the requisite toughness that somehow hung in the game and had the game in their grasp. So let's look at the final few moments here. The Knicks somehow trail by 5 points with 30 seconds left in the game. Jalen Brunson, who has been a mess in this series, shooting the basketball, and apparently the Sixers are Jalen Brunson's kryptonite because he doesn't perform well, and I guess that's a tribute to whatever they're doing defensively against Jalen Brunson. But last night, he finally gets a three-pointer to go, and it's a bouncer from the corner, and afterwards he kind of looks relieved that it went in, and he puts his hands up. Now, at that point, it's 101-99. There are 27 seconds left in the game. Now, there are people that say, okay, the Sixers at that point should call a timeout, get organized, they'll get the ball at half court. They don't at that point. They inbound the ball, and it's Kyle Lowry inbounding the ball in kind of a desperate little float inbound toss to Maxey, who can't handle the ball because everybody is getting jostled as he's trying to corral the ball in the air. He falls down, and at that point, a seasoned veteran player, instead of trying to pass out of that, calls a timeout or gets tied up or whatever you need to do. Instead, he panics, and the Knicks get the ball back with Josh Hart. Now, again, at this point, people are going to scream for a foul. He gets fouled on the inbound pad. He gets fouled while he's on the ground. If you look at the play, he legitimately lost the ball because the inbounds toss was being challenged by a couple of Knicks. So the Knicks get the ball back. DiVincenzo misses a three-pointer. And for my money, this is the key part of the game. Because at that point, you have to get that rebound. You can't afford not to get that rebound. And if you look at the play, Hardenstein comes flying in on a direct line to the basketball. Tobias Harris is blocking out OG Anunoby, and Bede's on the other side kind of standing stationary, and Nick Batum is just watching the action. Now, I understand that Tobias Harris is not held in a lot of favor, and in fact, I criticized him last night for not blocking out Hartenstein on that play. And people, believe it or not, came at me. Like, all of a sudden, Tobias didn't do anything wrong after they've been ripping Tobias for the entire season, and especially in the playoffs. When you block out a guy, it's one thing to have Anunoby blocked out. That's not the end of your assignment there. You then, once you block out a guy, you have to flow towards the ball. In a crucial moment like that, you can't afford to say, all right, I blocked out my guy. Now somebody else has to get the rebound. If you're in the earshot of that rebound, you're blocking out your guy, you see the trajectory of the ball, you move towards the ball. You don't stand still. And Hartenstein comes flying in and gets the offensive rebound. He gets to Anunoby, who gets it back to DiVincenzo at the top of the line, and he buries the three-point shot to put the Knicks in the lead. And Maxey, they actually have used this play a lot, where Maxey, on a straight-line drive, gets a left-handed layup. However, Hardenstein says after the game, they knew that was going to happen. And Hardenstein, or Hartenstein, as you want, if you want to pronounce it correctly, follows the play astutely and gets a block on Maxey. Now, there are just two brilliant plays by Hartenstein in the waning moments. Those are the type of plays the Knicks make that the Sixers do not make. On a night when Jalen Brunson took 29 shots, for crying out loud, and was like 7 for 29, a ridiculous amount of shots he took. In fact, he was 8 for 29, and he's been 16 for 55 in the series. And on a night when your MVP candidate is not making a lot of shots, you get contributions from everybody else. And the Knicks get contributions from everybody else. Josh Hart played all 48 minutes last night. That dude is a warrior. Miles McBride comes off the bench and gives them a contribution. Anunoby gives them a contribution. Hartenstein gives them a contribution. Off the bench, the backup center comes in and gives them a contribution. They get contributions from everybody, and they play hard and they play tough. And it was amazing that the Sixers had the lead at the end of that game. I still don't know how it happened. So let's go back even further. Because Kyle Lowry panicked on the inbounds play. But let's look at a play that's kind of overlooked. With 47.1 seconds left, DiVincenzo fouls Kyle. With a chance to put the Sixers up by six now, with 47 seconds, which is pretty insurmountable. It's 196. Makes the first, misses the second free throw. With a chance to go up six. That's a key play. Kyle Lowry at age 38, a veteran who's been through the wars, cannot afford to miss that free throw there. So after the game, and I'm disappointed by this, the Sixers got out toughed, all right? That's the bottom line. And for people out there that don't want to believe that and you want to blame the officiating, that's fine. That's an easy way out. And Nick Nurse blames the officiating after it, saying they waved him off when he was trying to get a timeout when Maxey was on the floor, and the officials waved him off because the ball is still live at that point, and they're not going to give him that timeout. But after the game, the Sixers announced that they're going to file a grievance over the officiating. Now, come on now. Seriously, where are we, in high school? You're going to file a grievance? You had a chance to make plays at the end of that game. I just went over it. The Kyle Lowry missed free throw, the offensive rebound, The block on Maxey, the Embiid not getting a rebound in the fourth quarter. These are all things that add up that make you either lose or win a game. and the Sixers are going to file a grievance over the officiating? I mean, come on. Yeah, the thing about that is that you're just going to play into the idiot fans' hands with that. Oh, see? They're going to file a grievance over the officiating. See that? They got hosed. That's why they didn't win that game. When in reality is that they didn't win that game because they didn't make enough plays in the end. I'll give them the courage of getting back in that game, staying close to the point where they could actually win a game where I thought they were totally outclassed. I'll give them that kind of credit. But at that point, that's a winnable game that you have to finish. I'm reading all the aftermath of the game this morning because it was really an unsettling feeling last night to see that they actually lost that game. So you get up early, you have a cup of coffee, you read everybody. And I'm reading David Murphy column in the Philadelphia Inquirer where he says, Embiid and Maxey shined in the exact moments and situation where a team most needs to rely on their horses. What? Yeah, okay. They scored a lot of points. They scored 69 of the Sixers total. I get that. They're the only two players that really you can count on at this point for the Philadelphia 76ers. But they didn't shine in the moments. Maxey lost the ball in a key spot and got blocked on a layup, and Embiid didn't get a rebound in the fourth quarter. And so you're going to just disregard that? No. Let's go deeper into this. The guys that they brought off the bench last night, I just want to go over this because this speaks to what the Sixers were supposedly built for. They were going to have more depth coming off the bench. Now, Melton being hurt obviously hurts that. But last night, the guys they brought off the bench were Paul Reed. How's he look in crucial moments? Does he look like a terror in those crucial moments? Nick Batum. And I warned people when he made those threes the other night in a play-in game, I warn people, I hope he has that on videotape because it's never going to come close to happening again. Nick Batum stood around for 33 minutes last night. Scored 6 points, 2 for 5 with 5 rebounds. And Buddy Hield. Now, if you're not watching the Sixers and seeing that there are two guys who are supposed to help the Sixers offensively who have shown that the moment is too big for them. And I warned everybody about this. I warned everybody about Kelly Oubre, who in my mind is the classic example of a con. And what I mean by con is he teaches you with some ability, but when you really need him to deliver, he doesn't deliver. And that's why he's on his fifth team right now. Kelly Oubre last night in the starting lineup played 26 minutes. He had 4 points and 2 rebounds. And there are people that are going to say, well, he played pretty good defense on Jalen Brunson. You need more from Kelly Oubre offensively. And he did not deliver. And the same with Buddy Hield, who looks scared out of his mind. Why? Because Buddy Hield has never played in the playoffs. He's never played in the cauldron of a playoff. He had never scored a basket in the playoffs until he scored on a layup last night. Played 15 minutes of crap. So when you got two guys that you can count on, With Embiid, who scored 34 points. I'm going to give the guy credit for scoring 34 points. But he missed his first 4 free throws in that game. And also Maxey, who was unstoppable early, wound up with 35 points. You're going to tell me you're going to beat a team as tough as the Knicks with two guys that are performing? Tobias Harris had 10 points last night. Where are you getting contributions from to think that you can win a series against a team that plays like that? All right, let's bring in producer Darren. Darren, go ahead. Fire away. What do you got?
Mike, I've been saying this for weeks. They're two players and a bench that couldn't beat Roman Catholic. This team has no depth. Forget the damn refs last night. Filing a grievance is embarrassing. It's really embarrassing because they got out-hustled. Out-hustled. Team basketball is kryptonite for this Sixers team. They crumble. The Miami Heat, I mean, they were lucky to beat Miami in that playing game. If Butler doesn't get hurt, they lose that game. The Knicks are a tougher team. They're deeper. They play as a team. The Sixers, they're going to be lucky to win a game, Mike. They will be lucky to win one in Philly. They're not going to win any in New York. I mean, it's not going to be a long series.
The odds are that you lose the first two games. It's 85% the other team wins. So I don't. And Embiid last night, it's just, you know, it's puffery when he says, "Well, we're still going to win the series. We should have won both games." Yeah. No, you should have. No. You should have won both games. No. I get it. Maybe you're trying. It's like false confidence, trying to pump everybody up.
Yeah.
They had five guys that did not play coach's decision last night on their bench. Five. So the only guys that they played were Batum, Reed, and Hield. KJ Martin, no play. Mo Bamba, no play. Cameron Payne is not even getting any minutes, and he's a guy that could probably help a little bit. Dalton, I don't even know why he's on the roster, and Ricky Council IV, who they're terrified to play, even though he probably can give him some energy. So when we talk about,
when does the general manager start getting blamed, Mike?
What's that?
When does the general manager start getting some heat?
Well, I think the general manager has been...
He walks on water in that organization.
With the organization, but maybe not the fans, and certainly not with me, because I thought it was a misguided ploy to bring in all those older role players in, thinking that you were going to be able to get contributions from them off the bench when they were all played out, and now you are left with this. All you got to do is look at the box score and say, how can this team right now beat the New York Knicks? How? Because the Knicks don't wobble. They may have bad shooting nights. Like Brunson, I don't know what's going on with him right now. He's not playing with as much confidence. Maybe the Sixers' defense is doing that. But it didn't matter. This is an MVP candidate who has shot 16 for 55. The Knicks have won both games. Why? Because they just are tougher. They play like I would give my kingdom for a guy like Josh Hart. Now, he, for some reason, he's shooting the basketball in this series when he can't shoot a lick. That guy is constant energy for 48 minutes in an NBA playoff game after playing an entire season. That is big ass testicles right there with Josh Hart. And they all play tough. And Miles McBride, who knew him coming into this year? They play tough. And I look at the Knicks and I go, if I'm a Knicks fan, I'm really proud of the way that team plays. I mean, Mitchell Robinson comes off the bench and has been giving them contributions. They haven't even played a Chewy yet. They only played three guys off the bench last night. Bogdanovich, Robinson, McBride, all of them made contributions. Bogdanovich made a couple of insane three-pointers that helped them last night. And they got their five starters in double figures. Anunoby had 10. Hartenstein had 14, the game of his life last night. But he plays like a maniac. And he throws up these left-handed shots that go in. Brunson had 24, shooting 8 for 29. Did go to the foul line a lot. And Josh Hart, again, with 21 points, and DiVincenzo with 19. The Villanova guys have been there before. And those guys, and this is where I'll give Jay Wright credit, along with Thibodeau, because he's the same type of coach who demands effort and defensive effort from these guys. But those guys are not spooked in the big moment because they've been in so many big moments. So, you know, we're going to look at this again. We're going to look at this series. And we talked about it before because people are going to say, see, Embiid is never in shape in the playoffs and blah, blah, blah. And I can't say that they're wrong. But it's like, how are you going to do better than having Embiid as a centerpiece and give up on this whole thing? You are kind of caught in a bear trap here with Embiid. You've got to roll with it. Now, the only thing I would say to Embiid, and I've been saying this for years, and I've been chastised for saying it. He needs to lose 30 pounds. He needs to get his body more like Giannis. I know he's not going to ever look like Giannis, but he needs to get his body in that kind of position where he doesn't look heavy-legged out there. He looks heavy-legged. And look, I can't complain about his output last night. But if you're a little more life and it's less stress that you're going to feel on your pins, which are a little weaker at this point. So that's what I would say. And it's never going to happen because he is just, I don't know, maybe his body type can't handle that kind of thing. But I look at an Embiid that came out of Kansas, and he was like Giannis. So I don't know why he couldn't lose 30 pounds and see where that takes him. because we see where this takes him. We see where this puts heavy stress on his joints, going up and down, up and down, up and down. And in this particular situation where he's coming off surgery, I guarantee you that he has some pain in that leg after coming into surgery. And he's stressing it out. And so by the fourth quarter, he doesn't have any hops. And that's what's happening. You can see it plainly. So where do they go from here? I don't know. The series isn't over. I know. I understand that. But for me, there's no way that they can summon enough acumen to beat the New York Knicks here with a 2-0 lead, the way the Knicks play. If the Knicks were flimsy, like if they were a team that, you know, sometimes Boston can get flimsy. You saw them last year. They check out of a couple games. The Knicks aren't that team because they're not going to check out of any game. So they can beat you with toughness alone rather than having their stars score a lot of points. And that's why I don't think the Sixers can win this. And then we're back to square one with the Sixers finally getting rid of Tobias Harris and have all kinds of cap space, which might not do them any good anyway because the free agent class is not great. So they're going to have to orchestrate some kind of a trade and use that cap money to do that for next year. All right. Let's move on because a lot of other things are happening in Philadelphia. Of course, this week, the draft. I have no idea where the Eagles are going to go. I think that their plan would be to trade up and get the cornerback who I think they like a lot, Quinyon Mitchell from Toledo. Now, he's rising up the board, and he may be taken from 10 to 12. So for the Eagles to get into that spot, they're going to have to make a trade. But they're going to have to make a trade with a team that could also use that guy. So if you're in a position to draft that guy, and cornerback being a premier position, if he's the top cornerback in the draft, then you're going to have to want to trade out of that spot when you can draft that same guy. So you're going to have to find a partner before – a partner doesn't need a cornerback – before a team that needs a cornerback to get Quinyon Mitchell. And I don't think that's going to be possible. So where do they go from here? Well, they might have to trade up to get an offensive lineman. If they miss out on Quinyon Mitchell, maybe they trade up to 15 – and they get J.C. Latham, the tackle from Alabama, which is a possibility. They could sit there and take Terrion Arnold, the cornerback from Alabama. I don't like him as much. Nate Wiggins, the cornerback from Clemson, will probably be there when they draft. I'm not sure I like him that much either, even though he's tall and he's got a lot of speed, but he's another guy that's loath to tackle. Or another trade-up to get a tackle, the kid from Washington, Troy Fontanu. So I don't really know where they're going to go. I have no idea. I'm not as high on Cooper DeJean from Iowa as a lot of people are. And I hate to say this. I think Cooper DeJean is a guy who will eventually be a safety. Now, am I looking at his skin color?
God. Yeah.
I probably am because I look around the league and I go, is there any Caucasian cornerbacks in the NFL. I mean, really, I'm not speaking out of turn here, but the last one I remember was Jason frickin' Seahorn way back in the day. So I think Cooper DeJean is one of those guys. Maybe he can play corner right now, but I think that more likely he's a safety down the road. So I don't know how the Eagles are going to handle this draft unless they make a big trade to move up and get a guy they can really use. And I believe that guy will either be a cornerback or an offensive tackle. Your thoughts, Darren?
From the beginning, since the season ended, I've been saying that they will go cornerback or offensive line. I'm pretty sure it's going to be a cornerback. And like you, I want nothing to do with Cooper DeJean. I'm confused as to why people are so high on him. I know he had some good stats in college. I know he's a great athlete. But, I mean, every other cornerback that's in the top five has light years of potential more than him. I think they're going to trade up. I think they probably already have a couple deals in place. If a guy they want is there, they usually do, at least of late. Everybody thinks Howie Roseman goes back in the first round. Of late, he's moved up almost every time. And I do think that they're going to move up and draft a cornerback. Unless one of those big, like top two or three tackles just falls. But I would be really surprised.
All right, Cooper DeJean, I think they fit the Eagles because he's versatile. And Vic Fangio loves versatile players. In other words, they can move him into a slot. They can move him to safety. But you're right. I think that they need a corner right now that they can develop for that position for the long haul because, you know, Darius Slay's 33 years old and Bradberry is over 30, and you never know what you're going to get from Bradberry. So I agree with that. But we'll see what happens with the Eagles draft. And we'll get in more of that draft a little later in the week and examine the players that that could be available. It's funny. There's a lot of information on players. And this guy from The Athletic, Dane Brugler, who's pretty good at evaluating players, has ranked like his top 300 players. So, you know, we'll look at who's on that list and who the Sixers, the Eagles. I still have the Sixers on my mind. I can't believe that game. I was just like stunned by it. I'm looking at this game. I'm going, I can't believe they're going to win this game. In fact, I was texting with my boy Frank Isola, who does the starting lineup on SiriusXM Radio. How did the Knicks lose this game? And then all of a sudden, boom, within 27 seconds, the Knicks win it. It was a turnaround that I really just did not expect. And I'm thinking, oh my God, the Sixers are going to steal this game? Maybe they can win this series. And poof, it was just taken away. All right, so let's move on to the Phillies. They've won the seventh in a row. I'm a cynic, right? Because I didn't really pay attention to the first six because they played the two worst teams in the league. I don't know how an organization gets as bad, especially the Chicago White Sox. I don't know how it's possible to mess up an organization and wind up with that. I mean, the Oakland A's are better than the White Sox or the Rockies. And I don't get how a front office can just allow that kind of thing to happen. The White Sox are terrible. They have no pitching. They have no fielding. They have no offense at all. So I didn't really pay attention. Now, last night, the Reds, they're a spunky team. And Ranger Suarez, again, delivers. I mean, the guy's been masterful this season. They won their seventh in a row last night. Unfortunately, nobody saw the game. Right? Because if you're watching the Phillies last night with that Sixers-Knicks game, I salute to you. That you're a true baseball fan. But nobody watched that game last night. You look up and the Phillies win on a shutout. And I give a shout out to my man Cody Clements, who comes up because Bryce Harper is on maternity leave or paternity leave, whatever you call it. And he has a double and a home run. And then Rojas has a triple. Now, I'm getting a lot of heat on Twitter from people. See, you wanted to send him to AAA. And again, see, here's the thing about me. I've been in this game for a really long time, right? I've been in this business analyzing players. I do not get a Woody over a little bit of production. I just do not do that. So for the people always overreact. Okay, he's raised his average. He's almost at 250 now, and he has slung in some hits against some bad pitching. And last night he hit a triple. That's okay. All I'm saying to you guys is, hold up a little bit. He has not conquered the major leagues yet. I hope he has, because that would be a major part of the Philly success if he can stay up here and hit 240. But I'm just saying, relax, just chill out a little bit. I don't think that he's solved the puzzle yet of major league pitching. All right. Let's move on, and let's go to Mike Unleashed for today. Mike Unleashed has a lot of interesting elements in it today, so let's go over a few of them. The first one I want to talk about is golf, because I just can't ignore great accomplishments. And I've never seen anything in this day and age where it looks like any good player can win a tournament. There are so many good players out there right now. The fact that Scottie Scheffler has won four of his last five tournaments is mind-boggling to me in today's PGA, the way these guys can play. The consistency that this guy and the pressure of continuing to win, he is unfazed by it. And listen, I hope we're seeing one of the great golfers. I mean, I don't know. I've seen golfers go on a run and then lose it because golf is that kind of sport. But Scottie Scheffler, amazing. And let's move over to the women's. Kelly Korda. Five straight tournaments. Now, I don't follow the LPGA a lot, But there's some pretty good talent on the LPGA also. And Nelly Korda has won five straight. Now, I know she's got good bloodlines. Her parents were tennis players. Her father was a champion tennis player. But this girl is something else. And she is the face of the LPGA right now. And an American face, where before, really, the Asians have been the face of the LPGA for a really long time. And Nelly Korda reaching her stride. She has a high-profile boyfriend, doesn't she, Darren?
I'm not sure. I can look that up. By the way, one thing on Scottie Scheffler.
You're not following the love life of Nelly Korda, a 6'1" blonde?
You see, that's your thing. I'm the brunette olive skin guy. You're the tall blonde guy.
Well, how could you miss Nelly Korda?
I know who she is. I don't know who her boyfriend is. By the way, one note on Scottie Scheffler I'd like to bring to your attention. You said he won four of the last five tournaments. The fifth, he was tied for second. So, I mean, it's just an amazing run that he is on.
All right, hold on a second, because I'm going to find out who Nelly Korda's BF is. These are the things that a producer is supposed to help me out.
Well, you didn't tell me we were going to go into Nelly Korda.
A producer is supposed to be plugged in to the modern culture, society.
Andrea Athanasiou, a Canadian hockey player replaced for the Blackhawks.
All right, there you go. A pro hockey player. So
I gotcha.
It's a high profile athletic boyfriend.
Andrea.
Nice job, there Nelly. You go. All right. So last night at the Garden, a lot of celebrities were there. Johnny McEnroe was there. I saw John Starks, Latrell Sprewell, ex Knicks are rooting them on. Stephen A. Smith had a courtside seat last night. You had Ben Stiller and Chris Rock out there last night. I will say that I was very disappointed at the Garden crowd, because you can't be chanting fuck Embiid. You know, there are some things that you need to draw the line on, and that will be one of them. There is no reason to yell an obscenity. Like, I even get bothered when a crowd chants against a referee, asshole. I'm going, come on, man. It's supposed to be a family environment. I know you're all gacked up, but the FMB thing is in poor taste. And you know, the columnists in New York should be ripping, and the sports talk hosts should be ripping their crowd. And instead, it probably goes the other way with those yokels up there. You know, I'm always one to take on the Philadelphia crowd when they do something wrong. Like a guy that dumps popcorn on a player's head as he's going into the tunnel. I ripped the hell out of that. And that's 100 shades away from yelling F somebody, right? So I don't like it. It's in poor taste, and I wish they would cut that out. All right, let's stay in New York. Aaron Boone got thrown out of a game for something a fan said. Hunter Wendelstein.
I was watching this live. I couldn't believe it. It was great.
Yeah, Hunter Wendelstein, and by the way, that was his 100th ejection.
Yeah.
The one that he threw
out. He has three times more, ejections than the next manager in baseball.
They're questioning a call, and a fan that was behind the Yankee dugout yelled some obscenities towards Hunter Wendelstein, and he turned around and he said, "That's it, Aaron, you're done." Come on, man. Seriously. Then everyone could say, "It wasn't even me. You're out of game." You would think that guy afterwards would apologize. Right? But no. Those umpires, they don't apologize for anything, man. So,
yeah, he said that Boone's got to take responsibility for everything. Like, come on, how's he supposed to control a fan? It was great. The whole thing was mic'd up. You could hear the exchange. It was great.
all right, let's move on. I read a story in New York Post this morning. Jon Bon Jovi has admitted that during his 34-year marriage to Dorothea, who's from Jersey as well, like a high school or whatever it was, Jon Bon Jovi said he was not a saint. And that, like, that's a hell of an admission there to say that, Jon Bon Jovi's a dashing guy, could probably have any woman he had, but I was conditioned to believe that he was like a perfect family man, that the rock lifestyle did not suck him in either. But he admitted that, he was fooling around a little bit. Darren,
you really thought that about him? Because if you did, I have a bridge in New York I'd like to sell you.
No, I did. He kept it under wraps for a really long time. Normally, you hear stuff like that. I thought, he's one of these rock stars who was happy with his home life. And it happens. Some movie stars are married for 1,000 years to the same woman, even though, they could probably go younger and more starlet. But I was shocked to hear John Bon Jovi.
Think you're being a little naive again. A little naivety there. That's the same. Right, there's no way in hell I would have thought that.
Maybe I'm a little naive. Okay. Let's look at, Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Inductees, Cher. All right. Ozzy, all right. Mary J. Blige, I'm okay with that. Dave Matthews Band. I guess. Any band, I went to see them because I was dating a girl who liked them at the time. And they sold out 2 nights at Veterans Stadium. And that's like 60,000+ people. And I'm going, wow, I guess I'm not on this train, but there are a lot of people on the train. So by that measure, I think they have enough fans that maybe they are Hall of Fame worthy. How about you?
I too went to see them because I was dating a girl that liked them. So I ended up seeing them 3 or 4, maybe 5 times. And each time I saw them, they got progressively worse to the point. See, I don't like when bands will just jam.
You're not a jam band.
Yeah, they're jammed for like 11, 12 minutes on a song. It's like, can we move on?
Yeah. You're not
like, there's
a jam
like
band
6
guy.
Songs they play in a 2-hour show. Like, yeah. I don't have time.
But you were not a child of the 70s where jams were perfectly fine.
But it's funny though. I do like, Springsteen has a couple longer songs like Thunder, Crack, Kitty's Back. They're my favorites. But this band, they're just too mellow for me.
All right. Do they belong in the Hall of Fame?
Probably not. It's close, but I would say no.
Foreigner.
No.
It feels like the first time.
Can you name 3 other songs? Can you?
No, I don't think Foreigner belongs.
No.
Peter Frampton. I want you.
I'm with Frampton, yeah. I think Frampton. He's had a huge influence.
Frampton
on
Comes
music.
Alive was the top-selling album of all time until it was overtaken.
The first album I ever had.
I'll go Peter Frampton. What band was Peter Frampton the lead singer of? Oh. Before he went solo.
Damn it. Oh, man. Humble Pie.
That's correct. Did you just Google that?
I will not. I cannot confirm or deny.
You Googled it. Humble Pie is correct, you cheating bastard. All right. J.J. Redick being interviewed by the Charlotte Hornets for the head coaching position. Does this guy have enough jobs? What is J.J. Redick? He's doing 100 podcasts. He's doing TV. And now he wants the Charlotte Hornets? I guess if you take the job for the Charlotte Hornets, you don't have pressure on you because they stink and he'll get a lot of years to build that team. Maybe that's what he wants to do.
Sounds to me more like an informative interview, just kind of pick his brain about some things. That happens often, right?
All right. What else do we have here? You have listed the money that Scottie Scheffler has made.
Yeah.
In the past 5 tournaments. $4 million for the Bay Hill Classic, the Arnold's course. 4.5. Add these up for me. That's 8.5 Players Championship. Another $550,000 for finish tied for 2nd at the Houston Open.
Right.
So that's $9
million. Right.
3.6 for the Masters. That's 12.6. And 3.6 more for the RBC Heritage.
15, 16 change.
Where I'm going next week, by the way. I'm going to play that course.
Are you? Okay.
Next week.
16 and change. That's a nice pull by you.
How'd
you
get on Harbortown. Harbortown. Nice. So, yeah, nice. It's good when you can get it.
Yeah.
All right. Finally, the last thing on today's Unleashed. I've been watching the trial of Donald Trump and the hush money trial of Donald Trump. I just find it very ironic that in the hush money trial of Donald Trump, where he was alleged to have made a payoff to porn star Stormy Daniels for the 30 seconds that he lasted with Stormy. The first witness called is a guy named Pecker. Yeah, I just thought I would. That seemed funny to me, very ironic. I have no other political comment.
He's the Inquirer guy. He's the guy, Inquirer guy, right? National Inquirer?
Pecker.
Pecker.
Yes, that's right. Pecker.
Pecker.
First witness call in the in a little mushroom.
I have to say one thing, and I don't delve into the political arena like you do, but I have to say there was a great line uttered this week by one of the prospective jurors who said, I wouldn't trust, and I don't care what you think politically here, I just love this line. I wouldn't trust Donald Trump if his tongue were notarized. That's a great line.
That's pretty good. I give him a lot of credit.
Yeah.
All right, let's close it down. You can get me mike@mikemiss.com for an email. mike@mikemiss.com. You can check me out on Twitter at mikemiss25 on Twitter. And also, I invited the people down at the winery last week. Good time was had by all of our couple of bachelorette parties at the winery last week. I showed up with my little dog, and my dog ran right to tables of eight chicks, just hanging around drinking wine, and they couldn't have been more delighted. My dog abandons me to go and flirt with other people. It's really an amazing phenomenon, and she just stays there and gets pet for like a half an hour while I'm talking business. But that's Natalie Vineyards, and it's in Cape May Courthouse, New Jersey. And we're getting a lot of good days. We got music going on Sundays now. So when the weather gets nicer, shoot down to Natalie Vineyards at Cape May Courthouse. You may see me there, but you'll have a good time and you'll drink some really good wines. All right. I think that's about it for today. Don't forget to get your lawn checked out with Natural Lawn. My lawn is spectacular. I mowed it a couple times. I love mowing my lawn because when you mow it, it comes back better. And with this great weather, the lawns are looking green and healthy, and that's because I use Natural Lawn. All right, you want a personal shout-out? Also, go to cameo.com and give you a personal shout-out. Are we done? Anything we missed?
No.
No?
We covered everything. We're on the list.
All right. Sixers, it's a damn shame. But they live another day, and they have five games left in the series. Can they win 4 of 5? I got the fingers crossed, but I also have them crossed behind my back.
Yeah.
Have a great day. It's a beautiful day, everybody. And we'll talk to you later in the week with a couple podcasts. We'll be on after the Sixers' next game to give you a live update. And, of course, we'll have our draft show on Thursday. So take care, everybody. And in the words of the late, great Steve Fredericks, see you.
Thanks for listening to the Mike Missinelli podcast on the Bet Rivers Network.